This week, we only have one thing on our mind, and that's sex. First, it's a reunion with our old friends, the Farrelly Brothers. Been a while since the Something About Mary guys have caught my eye. Do Jason Sudeikis and the Golden Pony deliver the hair gel hilarity? Then it's off to the Big Apple as we get a lesson in hubris with the documentary Client 9, The Rise and Fall of Elliot Spitzer. We review the big releases on Blu-ray and DVD and wrap up our Oscar coverage and break down the inventory of our biggest Best Picture snubs. So pass the brownies, reserve the hotel rooms. We're the first run.
I miss going out with you on Saturday night.
I think it would be good for us to go out one night a week where it's just you and me. I think
you
it would
be
helpful.
You've got to be kidding me.
What?
You just checked out that girl's butt.
Do you think she noticed?
How the hell does your wife catch you checking out another girl?
You got to spot her from 15 feet away, turn, then wait for her to walk into your line of vision.
What do you mean?
Look, you can't help it if her butt walks where you're already looking.
Oh.
What the hell is wrong with you two? You are completely obsessed with sex.
What are you doing?
Taking mental photographs.
Most married men believe that if not for you, they could actually be with these other women.
I'm giving you a hall pass.
A what?
A what?
A what?
A hall pass.
It's just you and me, buddy, for the next 6 days. Let me log out. Okay, you log out. I'm going to try to nail the receptionist.
Gentlemen, we just heard a quick little clip from the newest Farrelly Brothers film, Hall Pass. Now, they've brought us the legendary, the classic, if you will. I'll use that term loosely. There's Something About Mary, as well as Me, Myself, and Irene, Dumb and Dumber. But...
And Shallow Hal.
Okay. The Heartbreak Kid.
Oof. I love The Heartbreak Kid.
Of course you do. Oh, God. Sorry, but clearly we're talking about some diminishing returns.
Right.
And comedy, well, let me put it this way to you. Has the Apatow train passed the Farrelly Brothers by? I mean, because we clearly seem to be in that mode now, right? We have the Apatow factory. We have Todd Phillips.
Yeah.
And they seem to be really churning out the good comedies right now. And I apologize, but the Farrelly Brothers have not really delivered for me. Actually, since There's Something About Mary, I guess, if I have to be honest with you.
I don't know. Do you think that it seems like Apatow's also been plagued by the whole diminishing returns thing as well?
I can't agree with that. I think Funny People...
That's horrible.
But I think it's a different film. Yeah. I think it's him trying to be more mature. And I wouldn't group that in with that whole super bad 4-year-old virgin knocked up family. I think it's kind of its own. Mm-hmm. It's part of that film, but it's like the more mature adult version. I wouldn't say that it's diminishing returns because it's one off from all those other films. And I think all those other films are hilarious.
Well, I think to be fair, though, I think... maybe we shouldn't include, like, their super bads, you know, I Love You Man, stuff like that. Because those are, while he's in the school, it's not really he was the director in the same
way. No, but he was a producer. That's why I say it's in that family.
Right. But, I mean, the Farrelly Brothers don't really have that. All they have is the movies that they direct. They don't have an extended family. So if you just look at it as the ones that he's directed.
Right. Well, that's not what I'm saying. My question basically is that since tends to have been the more successful comedy road as of late is going kind of by that pattern, being part of that group.
Uh-huh.
Farrelly Brothers are their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So is their comedy, their kind of gross out shock kind of comedy thing, kind of passe at this point? Or is it just maybe they're just not, I don't know.
They've lost a step?
Perhaps.
I think there's always going to be a...
Like the Zucker Brothers. I mean, their peak was Airplane, but after that, you know,
Naked Gun.
Yeah, but even then, it's only the first one is really truly hilarious. The second one's okay, and the third one I didn't really care for.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, I think there's always going to be, you know, a market for gross out comedy kind of stuff. I mean, you know, a lot of scatological humor. I mean, just look at the success of South Park. I mean, the thing's been on for forever, and half their jokes are about poop and bodily functions and stuff like that. So there's always going to be a market for it. Whether they've just gotten, you know, long on the tooth and they've lost a step, I guess that happens. As you can say, I definitely think that Judd Apatow, if you just look at the movies that he's directed, he's had diminishing returns since The 40-Year-Old Virgin. I mean, I didn't think Knock Up was that great. I mean, it was funny. It wasn't excellent like The 40-Year-Old Virgin is. And Superbad, you know, wasn't even him. I mean, he produced it, but he didn't write it.
I think Knocked Up's a better film, though. I think it's tighter. It's better edited. It's better put together from start to finish.
But it's not as
four-year-old version can be kind of meandering and kind of.
Well, I agree with you there, but
But it's not it's really not funny.
It's not funnier.
It's not as funny.
I would keep them pretty even keel with each other, actually. Mm-hmm. But then after anything after that, Superbad even, I didn't think it was as well put together or as funny.
Yeah.
As either of those movies.
Well, you're wrong, but...
And plus, he just produced this.
Yeah, he just produced them.
I mean, produced Superbad.
I'm just saying, I think it's hard. You're gonna be hard-pressed to find any kind of comedy director, you know, who has a hand in writing these things that he's going to be able to maintain the same level of hilarity, I guess, you know, from movie to movie. I mean, they all seem to lose it after a while because one of the weird things about comedy is that it's funny the first time you see it and it's great and you get really excited for it. And then it's not quite as funny the second time. And even if it's the same stuff, you've already seen it all before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll be interested to see what Hangover 2 would be like, which, again, we didn't really even think the first one was that funny.
It was funny, just not as good as...
Everybody says it was.
Yeah. Well, I guess let's really get into this then. But first, clearly by my question, I didn't care so much for Hall Pass.
Yeah.
It had some laugh out loud moments, but it wasn't consistently funny for me. If you're not familiar with the plot of the film, our two stars, Jason Sudeikis and Owen Wilson, are given a pass off of marriage for a week. They have a week off from marriage to do whatever they want from Jenna Fischer and Christina Applegate, their respective spouses. And then, of course, at that point, the hilarity is supposed to ensue.
Right.
So, gentlemen, what did you think of the film itself, then? I mean,
I'll jump in here.
Okay.
It's not... You come to expect a certain amount of sophomoric humor with the Farrelly brothers, mm-hmm. and they delivered on that. There's the scene where Owen Wilson's character takes the girl home from the bar, and she isn't feeling well.
Jason Sudeikis is his character.
No,
right?
No, Owen Wilson. He takes the girl home, and she has explosive diarrhea in the bathtub.
That was Jason Sudeikis' character.
I think it was.
Chris?
Here's the problem. I don't remember it. I think that's a huge problem. Okay. I think that's one of the huge points for me. Yeah. I didn't care.
So it doesn't really matter. And I'm sorry for interrupting there.
You can have her.
I am sorry. Me too.
And it's even the gross out humor throughout. There's that. There's a lot of poop stuff in there too. There's the golf course scene. It wasn't funny. That stuff wasn't funny to me at all. And my biggest problem too with the humor is that I can't really remember anything that makes me laugh. Now, while I can still quote stuff from the other guys and some other comedies we've seen in the last year or so that I think is hilarious, I really can't remember any of the really key funny moments or provide any quotable lines or anything from this movie. Nothing really comes to mind at all. Owen Wilson and Sudeikis deliver capable performances. They're very affable. I buy Owen Wilson as his character, and he does add a pretty strong emotional core to the film. I buy his marriage with Jenna Fischer and even Sudeikis and Christina Applegate. I thought that part of it was pretty successful. I just think the problem with me is the whole conceit of the film is preposterous. I think the whole – and I get it, it's a comedy, so that's fine, and I'm willing to forgive that. I just – for the rest of it, it just didn't really work. There was nothing truly memorable for me. And the one scene – there's a point – actually got to see this with my esteemed colleague, Chris Esposito. We rarely ever get to see movies together. I can't remember the last time the three of us went and saw something together.
Yeah.
But there was a scene – I don't know if you remember this – where I actually said, oh, come on, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's a twist involving Christina Applegate's character at the end of the film that the movie just did not earn at all. It goes to this emotional moment and – it's so telegraphed, and I was like, no, come on, you did not. That's not fair. You can't do that. It's gonna sound weird, but disappointed in the film for taking that easy out by putting her in that scenario to kind of emotionally wrap the two of them back together again. And I just thought it was cheap and lazy.
Well, you know, I want to explain too. When you said that out loud, and I turned and I was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking the same thing, but I didn't even really give it a second thought because I just figured there's no way that they're going to do that.
Exactly.
But they totally did.
Yeah. And...
I mean, I don't know. I didn't think that. I think it was great. Now, I thought it was head and shoulders above that Druck, that Adam Sandler movie that was so
big. Really?
It was.
I would agree with that.
It is head and shoulders above that. I didn't think it was as good as Cedar Rapids, and I
agree with that as well.
And I would hope that, you know, we're going to see a better comedy this year. God, I hope so. But, you know, it wasn't – I didn't think it was that bad. I mean, I think it was part of the Farrelly brothers' trinity of of good movies of theirs? No, I don't think it was even close to any of those. But it wasn't the atrocity to humanity that The Heartbreak Kid was. It wasn't...
that was a good movie.
That movie was... There was nothing funny about that movie. That was a mean-spirited movie. That was not...
Mean-spirited, you think?
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was...
We're not discussing Heartbreak Kid.
All right.
We can talk about that offline.
We'll move on.
But I mean, I didn't think it was, I didn't think it was as bad. I mean, you know, it had some of their goofy hallmarks. I thought some of it was pretty funny. I mean, when the, you know, the older guys that go out and like some of Jason Sudeikis' pickup lines, I thought were pretty, you know, pretty funny.
But unfortunately, they're all in the trailer. And even had Richard Jenkins and Stephen Merchant in the film. Two guys I really enjoy, and even though they couldn't really turn it around for me. I guess I agree with Matt.
He was funny, though.
Stephen Merchant was really good. The Richard Jenkins part, I didn't care for at all. I didn't think it was that funny.
What's wrong with Richard Jenkins?
He was the cool guy, the rich guy who came back and took them all out.
Yeah, that didn't really work. So out of the three comedies I've seen this year, this is probably number two.
I'd say that's fair. Yeah, you're right. I would agree with that.
I didn't love this movie either. And I know the setup was ridiculous, obviously. And it didn't engage me the whole time. But there was definitely some funny moments to it. I think maybe it's one of those movies that, and you know, Chris, what you said about, you know, you don't remember any of the funny moments too much. I kind of feel the same way. I feel like maybe it's a movie that once it's on cable or something, you see it a couple of times. Hopefully you don't have to watch it a couple of times. But if you do, maybe there's going to be a couple that stick with you. There was some good, you know, good jokes, some good parts. And I didn't think that anybody was bad in it.
Yeah.
But it's as far as the comedy that we've seen this year, I don't know why you guys are saying Cedar Rapids. And not to go back to Cedar Rapids, I know we had our discussion on that, but I'm really surprised to hear that you think that Cedar Rapids was funnier than this, and that you think Cedar Rapids was funnier than Just Go With It.
That was by far. I mean, this was funnier than Just Go.
Just Go With It is one of the worst movies I've seen all year.
I got to say, Just Go With It was number one. This was a close number two, and Cedar Rapids was way behind.
Really?
Yeah.
I have to strongly disagree with my esteemed co-host here. I mean, this Just Go With It was all the bad things about Adam Sandler.
I'm not saying it was, you know.
It was bad. I mean, here's the thing. This movie is not great. It's not, it's not the Farrelly Brothers at the top of their form. It's not Kingpin. It's not Dumb and Dumber. It's not There's Something About Mary. But it does have at least a little bit of heart to it, unlike Me, Myself, and Irene or The Heartbreak Kid, which were kind of mean-spirited. So, and it doesn't really work for them. So, I mean, I think they're trying to get back to, you know, what they were. And I guess it's goofy scatological humor, but I mean, it's at least it's slightly different as opposed to, you know, getting wasted and getting chicks and stuff like that. Whereas it's, you know, like The Hangover or an Apatow movie. It's, you know, I don't know. It's deeply flawed, but I didn't think it was that bad.
So what are you telling people then?
I'm going to tell people, go see it if you want to go see a romantic comedy on a date or something. It's fine for that. If you're just...
I think it might be a little too gross for that.
That's the really wrong
message.
Definitely not dates 1 through 5.
Just not a... That probably doesn't sound like good advice. Let me say it again. I would probably tell people to see this on if they want to go on a...
Married date?
No, on a romantic... Not a romantic. On a...
Mail order bride.
If they want to go to a movie and they want to laugh as a couple... Because you could, it's really, that's what it's, sorry, but that's what it's based on.
I prefer going on movie dates and only one of us.
But it's, I think the humor plays out to a couple and their problems. And, you know, the couple can have fun laughing at, well, look how messed up they are. I think that maybe has a little more going for it in that realm than it does anywhere, you know, to a single male or a single female or kids or, you know, senior citizens or whatever. I don't know, people. I just that's when I think you might get the most out of this movie. And there's nothing wrong with it. I think you're gonna be fine with seeing it, but you're not gonna love it. You're not gonna go home and you're not gonna say, I can't wait till that comes out on DVD and buy it. Because you're not gonna care when it comes out on DVD. Sorry. So
yikes. Okay. I think it's maybe a rental. No, I don't think it's really worth your time. It's not that memorable at all. If you choose between this and Cedar Rapids, you say definitely go Cedar Rapids. But it's okay. It's, as Matt said, it's deeply flawed. It delivers every now and then, but it's instantly forgettable.
I'll agree with Chris. I mean, I think it's something you can rent or catch on cable. I don't think you need to rush out and see it right now. If it's between this and just go with it, I would definitely say see this. Whereas this may be instantly forgettable because it's not, it doesn't really try hard enough. Just Go With It makes you just want to forget it. So it made me actively try and forget that movie. So I think it's okay. I mean, I hate to say my usual, like, you could do worse, because you could at this point of the year, but we've got a lot of better stuff coming out. So just hang in there.
Yeah, save your movie bucks for the next, well, heck, maybe even this weekend.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, Hall Pass is available everywhere now. We'd love to hear your thoughts if you had a chance to see it. Shoot us an email at thefirstrun@gmail.com. Want to take a quick break? Come back. I'm going to fill you in what's coming up on Blu-ray and DVD this upcoming Tuesday.
Share prices continued to tumble.
Lehman Brothers was forced to declare itself bankrupt.
The largest single point drop.
The regulators, they had the power to do every case that I made when I was state attorney general. They just didn't want to.
We are watching this tsunami coming.
They were having massive private gains at public loss.
A financial engineer built dreams. When those dreams turn out to be nightmares, other people pay for it.
Bear Stearns, Goldman Sachs, Lehman Brothers, they knew what was happening.
What do you think about selling securities which your own people think are crap? Does that bother you
as a hypothetical?
No, this is real.
Welcome back to The Big Show.
This is Scalzo here with Espo and Matt. Now we're going to tell you what's coming out on Blu-ray and DVD this upcoming Tuesday, the 8th of March.
It's kind of a slow week, and one of the more hated movies that I've seen since we started doing the show is coming out, but I'm going to save that just for you, Espo.
First up, we have The Next 3 Days, that Russell Crowe, Liam Neeson movie with Elizabeth Banks, correct?
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's coming out with a Blu-ray, DVD, and digital copy version, a bunch of special features, including its standard and deleted scenes. I don't know if I have any interest in ever seeing that film, to be honest with you. I mean, I like Liam. Russell Crowe, I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
Wait, the last few movies, I mean, heck, that Robin Hood film. Ugh.
It's atrocious.
Yep, but The Next 3 Days is coming out. What's the whole point of that, too? His wife gets arrested, and he has to break her out of jail, and they go on a run.
Yeah, I
kind of remember the trailer, but I remember not really being interested in seeing it.
Next up, we have Jackass 3D, coming out with a Blu-ray, DVD, and digital copy as well. A couple special features, making of special, deleted scenes, outtakes.
Gentlemen, did you see the Jackass 3Ds?
I did not.
I haven't seen any of the Jackass movies.
I haven't seen any of them either.
I've seen the first two.
You guys see the third one?
I don't know. It's the kind of movie you got to watch in a party setting, I think. It's only funny then.
Bunch of people together, do some shots?
Yeah.
There you go.
Right.
What else? Well, we have your best documentary winner, Inside Job. Comes out on Blu-ray and DVD, including commentary with the director and producer, the making of, and deleted scenes.
Once again, if you haven't seen this movie, please check it out. But just prepare yourself and don't have anything close to you that you want to throw, because you will be throwing things at the TV. And the whole point, the scariest thing about that movie is the fact that everything that caused the financial crisis to collapse back in 2008, nothing's been done to prevent it from happening again. So think
did
about
you,
that.
Did you see the Oscar acceptance speech?
Yep, who he said that. Yeah.
Yeah, that was, wow.
There you go. Speaking of documentaries, another one that we reviewed that was also nominated, Exit Through the Gift Shop, comes out on Blu-ray and DVD. I should stress, too, that the Blu-ray does come with a DVD.
I see.
I know we all rather enjoyed that film, though, as well. And you can go ahead into our archives and listen to our review of it, if you'd like.
Hmm. And now, Espo. Coming out on
Blu-ray. Sounds like I made whatever this is.
Coming out on Blu-ray and DVD. Including a commentary by the director Roger Mitchell and writer Aileen Brosh McKenna, including a deleted scene. Morning Glory comes out on Blu-ray and DVD.
Oh, it's about time.
You want to hear one of the better all-time breakdowns, just snickersnag, drag-out fights on the first run? You track down that Morning Glory right here. Because I hated that movie.
I thought it was very good.
That's definitely going into the best of Espo show.
I think it should go into the best of Chris Pediscalzo show.
It should be.
I really do.
Best of the first run.
There you go.
Yeah, it was pretty heated.
That's because it's a horrible
movie.
That's
an understatement.
Yeah.
That's
an understatement.
Rachel McAdams Esposito stars as a daytime TV show producer who's trying to rescue a struggling daytime show. Stars right. Harrison Ford, Diane Keaton, and the movie is a train wreck. So check it out.
My favorite.
So check it out.
My favorite part of that review was when Chris went on that like 5-minute rant about how it didn't earn the art shots in the ball.
Yes,
don't get me started. And the relationship with Patrick Wilson too. I'm getting angry just thinking about it.
You can watch it again because I'm going to buy it.
Espo, a movie that Matt and I had a chance to see that you did not get to see. It's coming out just on DVD as far as I can tell. Perhaps a Blu-ray in the future. A film unfinished. It includes an interview with the author and film researcher Adrian Wood, scholar Michael Brennenbaum, Death Mills, a short film by Billy Wilder, including some of the first footage shot from within concentration camps post-liberation. Some other special features as well, but I think it's something everybody should see, but it's a tough sit. And if you don't recall, it's a movie about the documentary about the Nazi propaganda film. Is it, what was it, the Warsaw Ghetto?
Warsaw Ghetto, yes.
But there's some disturbing footage in there that just, even thinking about it now, definitely something you should see. And it's just a more lighthearted fare. We don't normally talk about television, but once in a while, something comes out on DVD and Blu-ray that we think you definitely should check out. Coming out on Blu-ray and DVD, sadly only limited to 6 episodes, The Walking Dead. Includes extra footage and features, including a making-of documentary.
It's off the air?
No. Well, they only did 6 episodes for the first season.
Oh, so it'll be back.
Yeah, unfortunately, though, you have to wait till Halloween again. So if you haven't had a chance to check out on The Walking Dead or check it out, please do. It is now available.
Awesome.
And now your straight to DVD pick of the week. This is a good one. It's one of those two where I didn't really grab the write up of the movie. I grabbed the Amazon review, which I'm assuming is somebody involved with the movie. It's called The Abducted. It also is known as Match.Dead. The tagline being, before you date online, think again. The review on Amazon by GuestStar57, also known as Chris, aka GuestStar57. Hailing out of Porterville, California. Chris, welcome to the big show. His title of his review is, James Ray is a Serial Killer, Not the Martin Luther King Assassin. Now, this is a really good movie to see what your imagination hopes the characters will do next. James Ray is incredible, mean and lean, and willing to have you hate him in the next scene, too. Kathleen Benner was perfect and truly stole the last minutes of the film and deserved a standing ovation at the Redbox kiosk as I rented it. Which I think is my favorite line. Michael Harrelson reminded me so much of the Duke, John Wayne, in The Cowboys. I just can't give away why. This was a total package of a freaking good movie making.
It's fantastic.
So, I think it's something to do about... Well, I think the director is also... I think it's just James Ray. But my favorite, another two is written by... This is a sign of quality. Written by Alan Smithy. But from what I've read too, it's just some really bad low budget slasher movie about some online dating.
Scary stuff.
But hey, anybody who can get a standing ovation at a Redbox kiosk,
it's gotta be worth the rental, right?
Exactly. And that's it. Short but sweet. That's what's coming out on Blu-ray and DVD this upcoming Tuesday, the 8th of March. So we'll take a quick break, come back, and it's time to get down and dirty. Now, and we're going to get a little insight from Espo, because out of, I think, the three of us, he has the most experience with high-class call girls, so we get a little that side of the perspective.
That is not true at all.
They're all low class.
In fact, I probably have the least experience with them.
With the ladies? Don't beat yourself up. So we're going to take some time and talk about Client 9, The Rise and Fall of Elliot Spitzer. Stay where you are. We'll be right back.
We knew that folks would come down hard on us if we ever stumbled, which is why the downfall was so shocking.
When I assumed office, which was January of 1999, investment bankers were, to use Tom Wolfe's great phrase, masters of the universe.
CEOs began to take everything they could, and ultimately that was going to destroy our economy.
They literally were terrified at this guy coming after them.
The New York Times identifies Governor Spitzer's mystery call girl as Ashley Dupree.
I have acted in a way that violates my or any sense of right and wrong.
Cheers erupted on trading floors as word spread of Governor Spitzer's stunning downfall.
First run, that's what you're listening to. This is Matt. With me as always, Scowls on Espo. So we're going to be talking about Client 9, The Rise and Fall of Elliot Spitzer. If that title didn't give it away, That is basically the story of Elliot Spitzer, his beginnings as Attorney General of New York, his rise to governor, and then his disgraced downfall. But what makes it a very interesting documentary is that it uses Mr. Spitzer as an actual interview subject, as well as many of his quote-unquote enemies, people that he went after and colleagues, and even some of the prostitutes that he frequented. So, me and Scalzo saw this, but Espo unfortunately did not. But we're not going to let them stop. Let that stop him.
He does have some strong opinions about
it. He certainly does. So we're going to let him speak and give his two cents, because he has some things to say about Mr. Spitzer.
Well, I do have some things to say about Mr. Spitzer, and that's that really anybody can make a mistake, and that's what he did. It sounds like he did it over and over and over again, but anybody can make a mistake. And I think a lot of people in Connecticut, I'm not going to say who and I'm not going to say what companies or anything, but I think a lot of people in Connecticut are associated with companies that may have been victim to some of his, maybe not victim is the right word, but may have been affected by some of his investigations and some of the right that he actually did as far as the financial industry and a lot of things in New York and in the country overall.
Well, he was on the trail of all those financial firms that right before the crash hit.
That's right.
I mean, he potentially could have, I don't know if he could have stopped it, but he certainly could have lessened the impact.
Yeah.
That's very true. He probably could have at least had a large impact. I know he had an impact before the scandal. It really is a shame that that had to happen. As much as I'm sure there's a lot of people who dislike him and were happy to see him go down, it's a shame that it happened that way. It's a shame that anybody has weaknesses like that, because they do. And unfortunately, he was in the public eye and was caught by the public
diddling a prostitute.
Right.
I think there has to be something to be said for, especially somebody like Elliot Spitzer, who was supposed to be enforcing the law, that he would be someone who we would expect to follow the law. I mean, he's putting himself out there as kind of this moral crusader. I mean, getting up and saying, you know, these things are not right, these things are wrong, these things are illegal, and he's doing those.
Oh, the hubris and arrogance of him is through the roof, totally. And that's one of the things I really appreciated about the film, the fact that, and Matt, as you stated, he is in the movie.
Yeah.
This is not talking to other people. He sits down and he's interviewed and he gives his side, and at no point, though, does he really, he doesn't dismiss any of the charges and say, well, that's not true, that's not what happened. He says, yeah, and he openly admits that he was taken down by his own arrogance and hubris.
Mm-hmm.
He totally was. Now, he does present, and the film presents, a case that there were some things working against him to help hasten his downfall. But he even says in the film that it's still my fault, and that those factors, all these things that were going on in behind the scenes, the time to take him down, they're not responsible for what happened to him. He is responsible for it.
Yeah.
Well, that's really interesting, because obviously the work that he was doing generated a lot of enemies. There was a lot of people who would have been very happy to see him go down. Mm. So any contribution that any of those parties could make, it's very possible that they maybe did.
Well,
see what they could do to,
and that's what a lot of the documentary is focused on. It's focused on, like, you know, him creating his enemies. And as Chris said, one of the striking things about it is that, you know, a lot of documentaries, you know, especially political ones, they present a very specific picture that the documentarian wants you to see. And while I think this one does have an agenda to kind of show you the, you know, the underhandedness of Washington, the politics of Wall Street, you know, the kind of how corrupt everybody is, at least it tempers it with the fact that this guy wasn't perfect either. I mean, he was doing good things, but he was, like Chris said, a victim of his own hubris. I mean, he was a bully. He was, you know, he thought he could change the system to make it his way, and he got his hand slapped for it, and basically, you know, he couldn't really, he just pushed, made too many of the wrong kind of enemies. But it's very, very interesting. It's very riveting. And it's interesting. I do appreciate the fact that he is pretty straight up, and a lot of his corporate foes are all kind of slimy and not really admitting to anything. Even if they're, like, on tape or, like, you know, in documents and emails, they never really admit to anything. Oh, I did like the his Republican enemy congressman who was pretty straight up about the whole thing as well. Mm-hmm.
I think it speaks to his character and how committed he was to his work.
Well, the film itself, though, I think it's very interesting.
Yeah,
I think it's entertaining. It's very colorful characters. I mean, some of the people involved in this are like right out of like a pulp comic. It's crazy. Deeply entertaining. It's very rich. There's a lot that's involved in this, and it's a lot deeper than just simply a story about a guy who stepped out on his wife as a prostitute. There's a lot more going on in this story.
Definitely.
Spitzer's really, he's no white knight, but he's a deeply flawed person, but I tend to forgive this kind of stuff for the most part.
Yeah.
Human failings of people. It's the hypocrisy that kills me. Though, I mean, he made his name on cleaning up, you know, some of the areas of Times Square, shutting down houses of prostitution and stuff, so.
Definitely some irony.
Yes. But I think it's definitely a film that's worth your time. I think it's, if you're at all interested in politics and keep in mind, Spitzer does have a show on CNN right now. I mean, starting to build his comeback. Do you guys think he has a chance? Do you think he has a chance to come back in politics at all?
People's memories are short. I mean, they'll forget. Given another, you know, 5-10 years of people who won't have even been alive, or they'll just be very young when that happened, they're not going to remember, and they're going to be the voters. I mean, it's nobody's going to care.
Because he was one of the up and comers. I mean, people are talking about him maybe running for president at one point.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. Time will tell. But it's a very interesting movie. I completely agree with you. It's I guess it's something if the intrigue of it and kind of like the corruption at all levels and how everything is. I mean, it's kind of disgusting when you really think about how corrupt all of society really is, mm-hmm. With any kind of power. But it's very, very interesting. I would definitely recommend checking it out.
Yeah, Espo, if you get a chance, you should check it out, definitely.
I'm going to, and I really, I'm sorry that I missed out on seeing this one. I can't wait to see it, actually. It's a movie that's drawn more of my interest than a lot of the films that we've seen this year.
So. that's not really saying much.
Well.
But, yeah, so everybody, The Client 9, The Rise and Fall of Elliot Spitzer is available on Blu-ray, DVD, and Netflix instant streaming right now. So if you've had a chance to see it, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Shoot us an email at thefirstrun@gmail.com. We'll take a quick break, come back, and then we're going to crack open the egg that is the Oscars. We're going to tell you what we thought of the ceremonies, what we thought of our boy Franco and the lovely Miss Hathaway. We're going to then wrap it up with an inventory of our biggest Best Picture Oscar snubs.
I can't wait.
We'll be right back.
The Bronx Bull, the Raging Bull. Let's hear for the great Jake LaMotta, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm the best. I can take him more than anybody.
You're dead. You're married. Leave the young girls for me.
There's no way I'm going down. I don't go down for nobody.
What is it with him? Why does he have to make it so hard on himself?
If you beat Trigger Ray, you'll get a shot at the title. You feel that way?
There's no one else around who wants to fight me. They're all afraid.
You've done a lot of bad things, Joey. Maybe it's coming back to me.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was the Oscars. And I have to say, excessively disappointing and dull and boring.
Yeah.
Franco, your boy Franco, Matt, what happened? Was he just high the whole time?
No,
what was the problem?
He was too cool to be there. I mean, he's too avant-garde.
I think he was high.
You think he was high?
I think he was high.
I thought he had a couple funny moments, actually. I loved it when he came out in a dress and made the Charlie Sheen joke.
But he was completely...
Unfortunately, that was like the only time that I thought was funny.
Anne Hathaway
was too giggly for me, too.
Yeah.
I love Anne Hathaway, but she was too...
Do you like Anne Hathaway?
Yeah, I do. I'm surprised
to hear you say that. I thought you didn't. Do you like Anne Hathaway?
Yeah.
Why did I think that you guys don't like her?
I don't know.
Are you projecting that you don't like her?
No, I like her.
Okay.
I like her. Maybe that's why I figured you guys didn't.
Just because you did?
Yeah.
That's usually a valid point.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Mm.
But yeah, she was way too bubbly.
Yeah.
They didn't play well against each other.
So they hire the two of them to appeal to a younger demographic, to draw in people our age, and it kills me to say this, younger. But it just didn't work. It wasn't funny. I was really missing Jon Stewart and Alec Baldwin, Steve Martin, or even Billy Crystal. It was at points, it was painful to watch. It just wasn't working at all.
But the Oscars are usually not fun to watch. It's all awful.
Can we have Russell Brand host next year? Maybe poach Ricky Gervais from the Golden Globes?
No, that would be unwatchable either.
Let's play. And I don't... All right. I have this whole rant thing about the Oscars that I don't know if I should save it for our Best Picture discussion. I mean, you can't go, we want to grab this younger demographic. We want to get to people and we want to show that we're hip. We want to show all this crap and then award Best Picture to The King's Speech.
Right.
I just don't know.
That's a good point.
I can't wrap my head around that at all.
Well, have you?
And I really think this is going to go down in history as one of the bigger Oscar snubs for Best Picture.
Yeah.
I'm putting this up there with like Shakespeare in Love and Private Ryan.
Yeah.
I'm putting this up there with, I am. I think it's crazy that King's Speech, I'll just put it this way, in 10 years, we're going to look back.
Oh, yeah.
And people are going to say, holy crap, Social Network lost to the King's Speech.
Yeah. Right.
And I love the King's Speech. I thought it was good. It was technically, I mean, everything was good about it. It just wasn't as good as The Social Network.
No, not even close. I think this is, I completely agree with you. 10 years from now, we're not even going to, nobody's going to be watching or talking about The King's Speech like Shakespeare in Love, like The English Patient. Who the hell watches either of those movies anymore?
Right.
It was a complete disappointment. But what it was telling is that I actually read an article in Entertainment Weekly about the Oscar voting and how it actually works. And it's
you talked about this in the last week's show,
yeah,
right?
It was, it's so convoluted. Like, it literally is one of these things. It's not like a one-for-one vote. It's like if they, you know, they count all the ballots and they see everybody, like they take like the top 10% of the films that are in the, that are even in the running, and then they get rid of everybody else, no matter how many votes there are. And then they kind of take each one of those and say who is mathematically impossible not to be beat, even if they were not voted number one, as long as they were in the running as one of the best pictures. So, like, you can rank your best pictures, I guess, and it doesn't have to be that you're number one or anything like that. Like, so if The Social Network was, like, everybody's number two, then that's automatically going to be in, even though it may not have been on the most ballots.
Hmm.
It's really weird the way they do it. It's really convoluted. It's some electoral college bullshit. So, I mean, I don't know. I completely agree with you. I mean, it was a complete disappointment, but obviously, based on my picks, not completely unexpected from my part. So
No. Yeah, and you know what? So you're entirely right when you made all those picks. It made perfect sense. I was hoping that they were going to do the right thing.
Yeah.
That with everything else kind of led up to me thinking they were going to go with Social Network. Instead, yeah. I never thought the Golden Globes were going to go with King's Speech because the whole foreign angle thing. But yeah.
Never doubt a period drama with some classy accents to go against.
I really
was
hoping that they could make a statement this year, especially with Social Network, a film that really defines its time.
Yeah.
I thought they'd eat that kind of stuff up, but they didn't. And the other big thing that really bothered me about the Academy Awards this year is Melissa Leo's speech.
Yeah.
That was possibly one of the fakest moments I have ever seen.
I
don't buy that for
even,
a heartbeat.
Even faker than Julia Roberts' acceptance speech?
Melissa Leo had been nominated and or won on every other award show so far.
Yeah.
It wasn't like this was a big surprise.
Right.
She was almost as much of a lock as Christian Bale was for this as well.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And she's all shocked and surprised and she doesn't know what to say. Everything's been leading up to her winning the Oscar and she drops the F. No. I didn't buy it. She's a trained actress. I didn't buy any of this stuff for a heartbeat. That whole thing was just a farce and that really upset me. I was like, come on, really?
Yeah.
No, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I guess it could be said true about any of them. I mean, Colin Firth.
I don't know. I think Bale was pretty. I like Bale's speech.
Yeah.
Colin Firth, I thought, was quite good. Even Natalie Portman, I enjoyed a lot. Melissa Leo totally rang hollow to me.
Well, I think there was probably a lot of people in the audience, well, and at home watching it on TV, that were rolling their eyes at that.
But I was rolling my eyes at everything in that whole damn thing. I mean, every, you know, whatever.
All right, so clearly we didn't care for it.
No, we didn't.
Well, we think it's Jon Stewart or Baldwin or somebody back for next year.
You know, I like James Franco and Anne Hathaway individually, and I thought they were fine, but I don't even blame them. I don't even think it was their fault. I think it was more
the writing,
the writing and the show itself. It wasn't produced to give them a lot of time to do
anything.
Yeah,
but their delivery was so off from each other. I mean,
yeah.
He was all down and low key, and she's all hyper and up. And even the beginning skit wasn't even that funny. I didn't even buy it. Like something that was pre scripted, they should have been able to phone in. It was. I couldn't even get
there
into
were,
it.
There was a couple laughs in that. I thought there was a couple. You know, it wasn't hilarious.
If by laughs, you mean like kind of thing? Yeah. Then maybe there was that.
Well, that's about all you get out of me anyway. But I did like when he introduced his grandmother and You know, how am I doing, Grandma? You know, I thought that was really cute.
Yeah.
No, it just didn't work. All right, so the Oscars were a mess. Yeah. Matt, what do we got? How did we do?
Okay, well, do you want me to go through the winners here?
Sure, let's talk about the winners.
Okay, so the Best Picture winner, just to refresh everyone's memory, is The King's Speech. Best Director went to Tom Hooper for The King's Speech. Best Actor went to Colin Firth.
Which, by the way, if I could just say, too, I really think you could have given the best Picture. What? King's Speech, you could have given to any random director.
Yeah.
That film is more about screenplay than it is. That's a written movie.
Yeah.
Not Social Network is not. That's a directed movie.
Right.
The fact that, I mean, I really think almost anybody could have directed The King's Speech.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody else really could have pulled off The Social Network.
No, I completely agree with you.
Excellent point. I haven't heard anybody put it clearer than that. That's an excellent. Yeah, that's exactly true.
You're welcome. Go ahead. Continue. I'm sorry.
Best Actor, Colin Firth, The King's Speech.
Mm-hmm.
Best Actress, Natalie Portman for Black Swan, The M-Bomb. Supporting Actor, Christian Bale for The Fighter, and Supporting Actress, Melissa Leo. So, out of the three of us, I picked 5 out of 6. I think we all kind of pulled a mulligan by pulling David Fincher, who could certainly deserve to win, and he was the front runner to win, and I seriously thought he was going to win, but Tom Hooper bested him. Inexplicably. And then my two esteemed co-hosts here, they both picked The Social Network, which I think deserved to win. It was my number one movie of the year, but I knew that it was not going to lose The King's Speech.
And how did I do overall?
Overall,
I'm curious about, like, because I picked every category.
Yeah. As the tiebreaker, because Scalzo and Esma picked exactly the same for the top six, Scalzo, you came in with 17 correct, which actually beat Roger Ebert, according to his Twitter feed. He only got 15 right.
Nice. And out of how many is it?
24.
24?
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Should have bet with me, kids.
Espo got 11 right.
That's 11, it?
Right.
Really?
11 right out of 24, yeah.
11 out of 24.
Well, you did make some kind of inexplicable ones. The technical awards, Inception pretty much swept those.
Yeah.
So you picked Inception for sound mixing, which it won, but you picked Toy Story 3 for sound editing. So I don't know why you wouldn't have picked Inception for that one as well.
I guess I just didn't expect a sweep.
Didn't expect a sweep. The only thing that you did pick, though, that our esteemed colleague, Mr. Scalzo, did not pick, which I was surprised, he got documentary wrong. That was the only one that he got wrong that you got right.
He got documentary wrong?
I chose Exit to the Gift Shop.
Yeah, and you picked
it. You know what's too? I went back and forth. If you actually look at my sheet, I had Inside Job circled.
Yeah.
And at the last minute, I'm like, yeah, I'm feeling, I don't know, I'm feeling like they're gonna surprise me.
Hmm.
So I crossed it off.
Hmm.
But I initially did choose Inside Job, but I went against my better judgment.
All right.
Like I did with choosing Social Network.
There you go.
Well, I could have done better. So how did you do, Matt, overall?
I didn't. Since I had a different pick, since I picked The King's Speech, I didn't actually fill out the whole ballot.
Okay.
So I don't know.
So, Matt, you got 5 out of 6 right then,
right,
correct?
I did.
And that's when I got 4 out of 6 right.
Correct.
That's not bad. Though I am quite pleased with my 17 correct.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Some of these, I'm...
There's a golf clap for you.
Well, what's interesting, I think the things that you got wrong were the things I don't think that you saw. So I guess that's good for the most part. Like the animated short, live short, documentary short. I don't know if you saw any
I didn't
of those.
See any of those. The one I was surprised about, too, was cinematography, though. I really thought Roger Deakins was going to get that for
True Grit. Yeah. Not bad. I'm pretty impressed. I think next year, we will have to do just the full pick just so we can all do it afterwards.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
So how did the contest go?
As well?
We had a ton of entries.
Yeah, we had a record number of entries.
We had a record number of entries for any kind of contest that we've ever had.
Yeah, it was good to get a good response. We hope for even more in the future, like a lot more.
But for different awards, because I think at this point they submitted for the Oscars, it wouldn't really be fair.
Yes, good point. We had a record number of entries. There was a lot of interesting submissions, too, a lot of interesting picks. I'd like to get the idea that, or have the idea, or have a vision of our fans, or our listeners, at home with their sheets watching the awards, just like March Madness.
Sure.
I'm sure it wasn't.
No,
actually,
I think writing in
sure it wasn't
the one with
like
your,
that, but
I think writing in the one with your mom as best picture was really.
Did you do that? That was on one of the ballots. So we did have one winner who she actually beat Chris and myself. She tied Matt Fernmore from the greater Springfield area of Massachusetts. So, Fern, you will be receiving, yes, congratulations, and you will be receiving your copy of the King's Speech on Blu-ray or DVD.
Why don't we say she can pick any of the Best Picture nominees on Blu-ray or DVD that she wants?
I guess we can make that available since the King's Speech isn't out yet. Blu-ray or DVD yet. So
yeah, I say we should let them choose.
Yeah. So congratulations.
Yay, Fern.
And thank you to all who participated.
Yay, you guys. All right, so I guess now we're going to segue smoothly into the inventory here.
Yep.
All right, so this is going to be our inventory of the top Oscar snubs. Pictures that were nominated for Best Picture, but inexplicably didn't win. So, fellas, you guys ready?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Are you ready to revisit this pain here?
Yeah.
I'll go first, because I never go first. I tend to go last.
I go first?
So I'll go first this time. Let somebody else have the closing glory.
Let's have Matt have the closing glory.
That's fine with me.
All right, so this is my inventory. This is my memorial Raging Bull list, because I think that's considered what the biggest snub ever, right? So I didn't choose it. I tried to be, I don't know, a little more imaginative. So my number five is 1998, Saving Private Ryan, losing to Shakespeare in Love. It's a pretty obvious pick, I think, but that is just ridiculous. I think the Weinsteins just choked the ballot box at that point and got the Shakespeare in Love to get the nomination. Though I do love, you know, everybody loves Ben Affleck and Gwyneth Paltrow, right?
Mm.
And Rafe? I'm sorry, not Rafe. It's his brother, Joe. Joey Finney.
Joey Finney.
Joey Finney.
They called him around the neighborhood.
That's right.
A little Joey Finney.
My number five, yeah, Saving Private Ryan being beaten by Shakespeare in Love.
All right, my number five is it's on Golden Pond, 1982, lost to Chariots of Fire.
What were the other nominations that year? Because I may have to hit you.
E.T.? No,
1982.
No. Oh, Reds.
Raiders. Yeah. Yeah.
So on Raiders? Golden, Raiders of the Lost Ark isn't as good as on Golden Pond.
Wait, did you say Raiders of the Lost Ark?
Yes. Yeah,
it was nominated that same year.
Was it?
Yes.
1982?
1981, depending on how you look at the Oscars. Yeah. They were given out in 1982 for the film season of 1981.
No, I mean, I don't think so. It wasn't on a list that I looked back at.
I'll tell you right now, you may be kicked off the show. Hold on 1 second, everybody. The anticipation is killing me. 1981, Chariots of Fire, Atlantic City, on Golden Pond, Reds, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Really?
Yes.
I'm sorry. That was not on the list that I looked back at. And I don't know what
you want to amend
Raiders
your
of the Lost Ark came out on.
You want to amend your choice then?
You're
going to switch
actually
out Golden Pond with
I'm
Raiders?
I'm definitely going to. I'm still going to say On Golden Pond is a great movie, but Raiders of the Lost Ark.
All right.
I apologize, everybody.
You should. Woof.
And Google apologizes to you, too, don't you, Google?
Matthew?
Okay, so my number five is also Chris' number five, Saving Private Ryan. Shakespeare in Love. I didn't even deserve to be in the category. It's not even exceptional in any way, whereas I think that was kind of a lean year from what I can remember from the other nominees.
Elizabeth, but Life is Beautiful and The Thin Red Line.
Yeah. Saving Private Ryan was definitely the best out of all of those, although
definitely,
you know, not against the Titans, really.
All right, my number four is 1994.
Okay.
Forrest Gump winning Best Picture. A good movie, but it will never be the classic that Pulp Fiction is.
Which is funny. I waffled on this. I saw this because, I mean, when I first thought of this list, I thought, okay, Forrest Gump did not deserve to win. Pulp Fiction, but then I was like, oh yeah, but The Shawshank Redemption
was
on that.
Yes, that's the other one that I thought you were going
to
say.
I know, but if I had to choose one movie to see, I'm going to go Pulp Fiction over Shawshank.
I think you're probably good.
I think, and Shawshank too didn't really grow in appreciation until TNT ran it ad nauseum for like 2 years.
That's really a tough year. I mean, any of those movies.
Quiz Show and Four Weddings and a Funeral as well. Mm. Quiz Show was really good too.
Was that the same
year? Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I think that year, the film that affected me the most and had the most impact, and one of the films that really kickstarted my love of film was Pulp Fiction.
There you go.
It was easily the most original vision that came out that year. Totally.
It's definitely very influential, that's for sure.
I think I don't think I could make an argument for Shawshank over Forrest Gump, but I could definitely make one for Pulp Fiction over Forrest Gump. So I agree with you. I love Shawshank Redemption, don't get me wrong, but I just feel like the appeal of Forrest Gump was so large.
I don't know. I think, I do think that Pulp Fiction is a very influential movie. And I think it's, you know, it's definitely something that's like a cinema classic. But I don't know. There's just something about Shawshank. It just kind of sucks you in. I mean, it's just like, if you look at it just as a narrative and a moving story, then as in a movie, I mean, that's really what it is. I mean, yeah. It's really engrossing. That's just me. Just me.
That's all you.
Espa.
Okay. Number three we're at?
Four.
Four for you, my
this
man.
Is my number four? Okay. Yeah. My number four is... It's Saving Private Ryan. It should have won. Shakespeare in Love sucks.
It does.
Actually, I don't even know. I never saw it because I didn't care.
I know.
It's unexceptional.
Yeah.
It's unexceptional.
It's cute. It's fun. It's not the best film of the year.
You know, Saving Private Ryan is not my favorite war movie.
Really? What is?
Probably, what is it called? Memphis Belle. Memphis Belle is my favorite war movie of all time. Memphis Belle. But anyway.
Really?
Yeah.
You've seen Apocalypse Now?
Yeah.
Seen Patton?
Yeah.
Platoon?
Okay.
Different, the Hurt Locker.
Different conversation. But Saving Private Ryan, I think, was just a powerful movie that stepped away from any other movie that was made before it in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And it didn't get recognized for it, and it was ridiculous that it didn't. And nobody gives a, like you said before, nobody gives a crap about Shakespeare in Love.
Right. It's the Weinsteins and the power of money.
I guess.
Yes. All right, so my number four was from 2005, Crash, which I think is a highly... highly over-touted movie. I think I'm going to go a little Dark Horse, because I think a lot of three of the other films that were nominated deserve it head and shoulders. I mean, Brokeback Mountain's a great movie. Munich was a pretty good movie. But I think I'm going to go with Capote. I really did like Capote a lot. I think that probably deserved to win more than Our Friends with Crash and its coloring book version of racial stereotypes.
Yeah, that movie is offensive, I think. It's like... I just, when I saw that film and it won Best Picture, I was so disappointed.
Yeah.
It is so bad.
It's really extreme.
So,
everything about it.
And it's a good lesson, though. I mean, I didn't even realize until I saw the movie that racism is bad. Thank you, Paul Haggis.
Well, I mean, it really does open your eyes. I mean, it does open your eyes to things that, you know, if you sexually assault someone but then save their life later, then they're going to forgive you immediately.
Yeah.
That's another thing that you didn't realize.
Crazy what's going on out there in LA. My number three, 1976. Rocky wins Best Picture.
A good movie.
To be sure. It's a good movie.
It is a good movie. It's not as good as All the President's Men.
No.
It's not as good as Taxi Driver.
No.
And it's not as good as the one I finally chose between those. And also Bound for Glory was nominated, but it's not as good as Network.
Yeah.
I think one of the greater films about just news and television ever made, and highly prophetic. Network is a fantastic movie, and I apologize, people, but it is a much better film than Rocky.
As are All President's Men and Taxi Driver.
Definitely.
Do you think maybe that was a year when the wide appeal of the movie actually counted for whether it should win or not? Because Rocky, I think, appealed to a much larger audience than any of the other movies that were nominated.
Well, I don't know if I would agree with that either. I mean, it's maybe had a more feel-good, even though he lost, but kind of a feel-good feel to it. All the other films were more, perhaps, sort of more cynical. But, hey, I mean, you look at the films in the mid-90s, that class at the end of the 90s, some of the greatest films ever made. Routinely, every picture could have won Best Picture. I mean, it's fantastic when you're looking at this chart. But I think that, I think that was wrong. I think that was the wrong pick. Network is a much better film.
All right. My number three is, you know what? I don't know what you guys are going to say about this one. It could go one way. It could go a total different way. Good Will Hunting over Titanic. I think it should have been Good Will Hunting over Titanic.
I think so.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really see anything inspired in Titanic. Whereas Good Will Hunting, I thought was, I don't want to use the word triumph, but it was a real, like, victory for, you know, hardly heard of writers that weren't heard of for writing before. They were bit parts in movies. Just Robin Williams did a great job, whatever. the acting was excellent. I just think they had a lot more depth to it than Titanic, which was, it was going to be a blockbuster because there was so much money thrown at it, and it was so, I don't know, it had just had everything in it that everybody wanted. It had
Leonardo DiCaprio,
and it had, you know, it had a story that everybody wanted to hear told. It had...
You're right and wrong, because I agree with you in some points of Titanic. The reason why that won is because the film, it was such an achievement. I mean, everything that Cameron did on that film.
I hope it doesn't come out that
just
way.
Like he did with Avatar. Just things hadn't really been done before.
Yeah.
But that and it made the most money.
That didn't garner him the award in last year for Avatar.
Titanic is a far superior film to Avatar.
Well,
but Titanic is a good movie. It's not the best film that year. Unfortunately, you didn't pick the best film that year. Matt's going to talk about what it is a little later.
All right.
But... Yeah, no, Titanic. It's I understand why Titanic won. You can make the case, and I would buy
too,
it. But I think when Matt gets to his choice is going to be a much superior film.
It is.
Is it your one coming up right now?
No, not right now. You're gonna have to wait.
I have to wait.
Yeah, sorry. So all right. So my number three is from 1990. There was an overblown, kind of racist movie that won, Dances with Wolves, starring our friend Kevin Costner. Lost out to, it beat out, I should say, it beat maybe a kind of racist movie, but the penultimate gangster movie, Goodfellas.
Godfather 3?
Not Godfather, I mean, real close, just a hair above it, but a gangster movie that was different. I mean, it wasn't like The Godfathers, and I'm not taking anything away from those films, because the first two are some of the greatest films ever, but it's not as romanticized, it's not as... It's kind of, you see the kind of dirtiness, the violence, the lack of loyalty, there's no honor among these thieves. And it's probably one of Martin Scorsese's crowning achievements, really.
Certainly.
And it's definitely way better than Dance with Wolves, a 3-hour, I don't even want to know what you would call this.
And I think Goodfellas is better than Departed, but that's another whole discussion.
Yeah, well, that's another whole discussion as well, yes. But Goodfellas... Easily beats out Dance of the Wolves.
Totally. I would definitely.
That was remade later called Avatar.
Yeah.
And Espo, for you, I think you may have chosen this film instead that year. Ghost was also nominated.
All right, enough.
My number two, 1952.
Wow, you're going really far back.
This is one of the craziest ones I can ever remember. Cecil B. DeMille. One of the more overrated. And the film, it's just not a good movie. The Greatest Show on Earth. Jimmy Stewart. It's just. Not a good film.
You've seen that?
Yes, movie? I did. I must have seen it. It's probably not even that long ago. It's probably like, I must have been a kid because it was like 10, 15 years ago. So that would have made me like 10. But it lost. It beat High Noon.
Wow.
One of the best Westerns. Now, there's some revisionist opinion about High Noon now. Mm. And in fact, John Wayne disliked the film so much. They made Rio Bravo because they said there's no way that everybody would have deserted the sheriff. He would have had his companions. He would have had the people, and that wasn't the proper. But High Noon, if you haven't seen it, is a fantastic film. Gary Cooper, Grace Kelly, and it's about just the sheriff, whatever, all the baggers are coming back to exact their revenge, and everybody deserts him.
Yeah.
It's up to him to face everybody alone.
Yeah.
And it's great. And the anticipation with the clock and everything throughout the entire film. Yeah, that's possibly... Well, obviously, it's not my number one. But, that is a crazy one. Greatest Show on Earth beating High Noon. That's
about. All right, my number two. All right, it's a little bit of a cop-out, but...
I expect nothing less.
I can't believe The King's Speech won. I really think it should have been Social Network.
Yeah, I agree.
But you know what?
I thought about making that my number five.
I put Black Swan above. I think it should have been Black Swan. Yeah. That's my number two snub.
Well, it's funny, when we did we had the conversation where I'm dropping Black Swan in my rankings of the top films of the year.
You did?
True. I'm replacing, I'm swapping out that in Social Network.
I'm really surprised to hear you say that.
Well, because Black Swan, it's too heavy-handed, and it's too obvious.
It didn't even make my top 10.
Yeah, that's right.
It's still in my top 5, but... I think the issue was I'd seen Black Swan much more recently, and then I saw Social Network again about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it just blew me away all over again.
Yeah.
That's why I juxtaposed their position.
Either one of them, is the most...
Not 127 Hours? That was my best film.
I love that, too. I love that movie, too.
That was an excellent movie.
And this really was a good year for movies.
It was a good year.
I mean, there was a lot of...
Better than last year.
Best Picture nominees that deserve to be Best Picture nominees. But Social Network and Black Swan, they were the most talked about films of the year. King's Speech was the most talked about film of the last month.
I want to stress, it is a good movie. The King's Speech is highly entertaining. It's a great film. It's not as good as Social Network or 127 Hours or in Espo's case.
Or not just in my case. I think in reality, it's not as good a film as Black Swan.
Winter's Bone. I could make the case.
I would argue Winter's Bone five. Never mind. I would argue Winter's Bone way ahead of King's Speech. Mm. I really would.
That's fun. Matt?
Okay. So my number two is kind of like the historical reference to the King's Speech. It's 1996, where the English Patient beat out the Coen brothers' Fargo. Mm-hmm. Inexplicably. Again, this is a case of overwrought period drama beating out a quirky, intelligent, classic film. I think it may... I don't know. It may be...
Is it your favorite?
No.
That is a bold statement if you do.
It's not my... It's in the top... It's probably in the top three for me.
Of the Coen brothers' movies.
Yeah, I think so.
Raising Arizona up there, too.
Okay, maybe top five.
We'll I was going to say, yeah. You got a lot of...
Yeah. I'm going to say it's definitely in their top five. And it was definitely...
I could agree with that.
It's definitely way better than anything else that was nominated that year. Way better than The English Patient. So.
Jerry Maguire, Secrets and Lies, and Shine.
Jerry Maguire was nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah, that's what Cuba wanting.
I forgot about that. I remember him winning for that, but I didn't think that it was nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah. All right. So now I know what Matt's number one is. My number one, and this pains me to say this because I love her so much, 1964. My Fair Lady wins Best Picture. My darling Audrey Hepburn. Beats one of the best films ever made. Stanley Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove. One of the strongest and best satires you will ever see in your life. And absolutely hilarious from the opening to the closing. If you have not seen Dr. Strangelove, go out and buy it. Don't even worry about renting it. Buy it. It is a classic film. Hilarious. And scary all at once. Some of the best lines you'll ever see in a movie. Peter Sellers has placed three different characters in the film, and he's just brilliant. I think it's his crowning achievement as an actor. I love this film, and that's my number one.
My number one, Matt had selected as his number three. Goodfellas and Dances with Wolves 1. And again, Goodfellas is one of the best. It's definitely the best movie that was made that year, and it's one of the best movies of that type ever be made. And I think it stands up. I think Dances with Wolves. I think the people that saw it that year didn't even think it was that great. Even that just saw it, and I know nobody thinks it's great now.
God, I hate the Oscars. They're also looking at the back of this list. I realize how full of crap the Oscars are.
Yeah, they get it wrong. I totally agree.
They get it wrong, 90% of the time.
Yeah.
It's messed up, man. It's messed up. All right, so my number one, which we've telegraphed plenty here. So it's 1997. Titanic was the winner. And I'm not going to say, as Chris said, it was a technical achievement. It was the most expensive movie. Was it the most expensive movie ever created at
I
that point?
So. Yeah. I think so.
But here's the thing.
I think it made the most money at that point ever.
Yeah, it wasn't until Avatar.
It was in the theaters for a year or something.
If you don't adjust for inflation, yes. It's the film that showed the buying power of the teenage girl. It's not particularly well acted. I mean, Billy Zane hammering up, chasing after them with a gun while the ship is sinking.
It was 20 minutes of just repeatedly, Jack, Rose, Jack.
It's not even acted particularly well. The story is sophomoric. I mean, it's terrible.
And you know how it ended.
Yeah.
No surprise. It sunk.
Yeah. And one of them died. Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I ruined it for you. I mean, granted, I get it. It's an entertaining piece of fluff. It's a technical achievement, just like Avatar. I would say it's more entertaining than Avatar, but not obviously. Not as much of a technical achievement. But it lost out inexplicably to L.A. Confidential, which is...
It beat L.A. Confidential.
Yeah, right. I'm sorry. Yes, excuse me. That's the second time we've done that in this inventory. It beat out L.A. Confidential, which is a classic, you know, film noir. Mm-hmm. You know, it's dirty. It's got incredible performances from Russell Crowe and Kevin Spacey, and I think maybe
Guy Pearce
and Kim Basinger, and probably her last good role. Yeah, that was an incredible movie. And it somehow inexplicably lost to the buying public of America. Buying power of the public, I should say.
Great pick. I totally agree.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any honorable mentions then?
I have a few.
Yeah, I have some that are a little controversial, so I threw them out. I didn't put them in there. The Chicago, I didn't think it should have won, but I don't know what really deserved to win. I kind of just threw out a layup.
Yeah, with the pianist. Gangs of New York, yeah. The Hours, Two Towers, and The Pianist. That's tough.
The Departed, while I understand it was kind of a Lifetime Achievement Award, I thought Little Miss Sunshine was better, although I didn't
think so.
I think The Departed was a decent movie. I put The Elephant Man over a tied with Raging Bull, or Annie Hall, which is a great movie, but then it lost to Star Wars, which, you know, obviously is a cultural phenomenon, looking back in hindsight. And just because I'm a horror freak, The Exorcist over The Sting back in 1973.
Interesting. Mine were your obvious ones. One of Espo's, Chariots of Fire, beating Raiders of the Lost Ark, English Patient beating Fargo, and then finally Kramer vs. Kramer beating Apocalypse Now.
I don't know how I feel about Apocalypse Now. I can't tell you how many times I've watched that movie, and it's almost slow torture every single time I watch it. Yeah,
It's not.
It starts not good, it's really awesome in the middle, and then it kind of falls apart at the end.
Yeah. But I think it's still a better movie.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's one.
All right, I really didn't have any honorable mentions that haven't been covered. I was doing the research. I was really interested in one thing, and I'm wondering if either of you ever saw it. Was Citizen Kane. I know a lot of people could argue that is the best movie ever made, or have argued that way. It lost to a movie called How Green Is Your Valley?
Yep.
That I've never heard of. I don't think anybody has.
That's back in the show's 10, too.
So
Maltese Falcon came out that year. Sergeant York. Suspicion, one of my favorite Hitchcock classics.
Has anybody seen How Green Is Your Valley?
I have not, no.
All right. Did you know that it had lost to a movie that nobody even knows anymore? I didn't know that.
Well, some people know it, but yeah, I knew it didn't win. Yeah,
it was news to me. I was surprised to hear it.
That just goes to show you the Oscars are crap, so you shouldn't pay attention to them at all. pay attention to the nominees. Don't pay attention to the winners.
There you are. All right, that's the inventory of our biggest Best Picture Oscar snubs. What are yours? What movies have you seen? And they said, there's no way in hell that won. This should have won instead. We'd love to hear it. Shoot us an email at thefirstrun@gmail.com. Take another quick break. Come back and fill you in what's coming up on the big show next week.
Matthew, the summer's over. I want to hear your plan.
I guess my plan is to keep working at Suncoast Video until I figure out what I want to do with my life.
We just think you have such potential. You could be an astronaut.
Oh, problem solved. I'll just be an astronaut.
You are not going to believe who was just in here. Tori Frederiking.
Don't I know you? It's me, Tori.
Matt Franklin.
Where do you work?
I'm at Goldman Sachs.
So, are you going to Kyle Masterson's party tonight?
Amazing! You're going to trick her into liking you. And then you're going to be like, it's me.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. You've heard us talk about the Oscars, you've heard us talk about Client 9, you've heard us talk about the Blu-ray DVD picks, and you heard us talk about Hall Pass. So, what's up next for us? Next week, we're going to be checking out the Adjustment Bureau.
Yes.
We're all pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I got pushed back. I think I'm sticking to the fact that people thought it was going to be too close to Inception, and they pushed it back. They didn't want to confuse people.
I've heard earlier reviews say it's pretty darn good. Yeah. So.
And we're also going to be checking out the another pushback from Matt. You found out this was pushed
actually,
back as well, right?
Actually, Scalzo found this out.
It's been on a shelf for 4 years.
Take Me Home Tonight.
Which explains why Topher Grace is in a movie.
But it's a 80s comedy, or 80s spoof comedy. So we're going to be checking those out next week. We are also going to be having our great debate. And this time the topic is Matt Damon.
I'm curious, too. What Matt Damon movie am I going to choose to protect? into a champion.
It's tough. I think I know which way Espo's going to go.
You do? I don't think you do.
You just brought up Good Will Hunting.
I don't think you know.
He didn't deny that.
I happened to mention a good a Matt Damon movie before, but I almost said a Will Hunting movie.
You're going to choose like Mr. Pizza?
We'll see. Was he in that?
That was his first movie.
Was it?
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, we got... Let's choose from True Grit, Hereafter, Green Zone, Invictus, Informant.
Stuck on You.
The Bourne films.
Anyway, we'd like to hear from you on that topic, actually, and really any support that I can get. Please tell me your favorites. I bet you'll see eye to eye with me. Maybe, probably not, but maybe with one of these guys too. Any help we can get from the audience we're excited for it. Or I am.
All right, let's wrap it up.
Anyway, you can Matt. Where can they email?
Well, it's like hosting a show with my grandfather.
You can email us at thefirstrun@gmail.com. You can check us out on our witty tweets. Just look for @thefirstrun. Or check us out on the Facebook. Search for The First Run. I also got a website out there. www.thefirstrun.com.
I think we can drop the www at this point.
No, that's what makes it a website.
All right. Well, thanks for listening to The Big Show, everybody, and we'll see you all in a week.
That was my beer.
Oh.
Let's study.
Did you see that study that they did about how the human papillomavirus, that 50% of the men have it?
Yeah.
Did you see the countries they studied it in now?
Uh-uh.
United States, Mexico, and Brazil. Why don't I get the feeling if we cut out the United States,
yeah,
it's going to jump to like 80, and if we take out Mexico and Brazil and just do the U.S., it's going to be like 20.
Nice.
Mexico and Brazil. Might as well throw in Haiti for while you're at it.
Yeah, Thailand. We looked in only Bangkok, and 95% of all men.